Today is April 23rd. It's a Saturday, and it is Earth Day weekend here in Central Missouri. And I am Barbara Ross, and I'm here interviewing for the fourth and final time our good friend Winky, whose real name happens to be Florence. Oh, we're going to have to make a correction here. It's what is it? It's Florence. Oh my goodness.
Florence Walter Andrews Chestnut Friedrichs.
There you go. Okay, Florence.
The whole thing.
Andrews.
We got Walker.
Chestnut. Florence Walker. Walker
Andrews.
Andrews Chestnut Friedrichs. Okay. We'll have to do some editing there. Okay. Okay, Winky. On this, our final day, I want to get through about four questions with you. And then for a final wrap up, I want you to talk more specifically about the plantation itself, the home structure that's on the plantation, the outbuildings that are around here, and the history, how it came to be here, how Pleasant Green came to be here. So the first question I want to go over is, what is it that you have enjoyed most in your life?
I think the discovery of history. I nearly flunked it in high school and ignored it in college, but moving around the country during my life, each community has had a special character. And by going into the history of a place, you learn why the people are like they are. So I guess my biggest contribution was starting two historical societies and working with a museum up in Iowa and working with developing an art center in Louisiana, as well as a historical society. Very different cultures.
Okay, excellent. Next question. What do you consider the greatest accomplishments of your life? Or do you think of those things that you enjoyed the most also being part and parcel of your accomplishments?
Well, of course, my four children come first. They've been my delight and my raison d'etre for years and forever. I guess the most worthwhile thing probably I've done is a historical, well, publicity, promoting history, because I discovered it late in life how important it is. The one thing I did with Ann Bettridge, who was a teacher here in Missouri, we found the people that toured our homes, the kids, had no idea that there had been a civil war here, and that it had been pioneered and that sort of thing. And so we decided to write a history book for fourth grade children and donate it to the schools for the kids. This was some 17 years ago. I did the illustration. She did the writing. My land had turned into a huge book, but we were able to get it published and printed and donated to the schools for the fourth grade children every year. To do this, we formed a historical society for the county, and it was very active, and the fundraising, much of it went to the publication of these books that were given to the children. Now it's a little out of date because everything's online, and looking back, we should have put that online earlier. But
what did you entitle those books, those history books?
Discovering Cooper County by Looking Back. And my contribution was merely looking up the illustrations and drawing the ones I couldn't find.
Okay, excellent. What do you see, Winky, as the future of Pleasant Green?
Frankly, I can't see that far ahead. history has lost its charm right now, and it isn't a popular subject. And of course, the only reason this house exists is because of it's kind of a tourist attraction of a historical nature. But people would rather go to the casinos now, and they have other hobbies. So it may just be sold for scrap, or one of my children might be interested in keeping it up. It's quite a responsibility. But I'm not going to dwell on the future. It's served me well.
Very good.
And lastly, I want to take up the subject, which is a little longer and broader, of the history of Pleasant Green, in the sense that tell us about the structure of this home, the land it sits on, how did it come to sit on this property? And then secondarily, there are a number of outbuildings that remain here. One is an old post office, and then there's a structure immediately behind the house. And I'd like you to talk just a little bit about that, and to talk also about where the slave structures, the slave quarters were located in many years past.
The place was built here somewhere in the early 1800s. The men of the family came out and built a fort first. Across the road, north of what's now the house. And then I think they came out during the summer and made bricks. Winston Walker had three strong sons and a nephew and two black men. Now, this is what the family tells me. It's not in writing. But they did build kind of a fort. And his wife, Polly Walker, did not want to come out here in a covered wagon. She wanted to come in her buggy. So I'm assuming she came by land on what is now Highway 60 going across. That's an old route going across Missouri.
It would have been just a trail in those days, would it not?
Well, it was a pretty old trail, just like the trail we're on here.
A well-used trail, but nonetheless, yeah. It was just a wagon trail.
Well, yeah, probably. I don't know. We'll have to guess.
Well, we know it wasn't a paved highway.
Right. No. Rough road. The spring was at the foot of the hill here. The location was good, sheltered from the northwest wind. After they had this little fort, they dug clay. This to the west, it's a good clay bank, made bricks, and finally had enough, I think, to build this one extended room building here. And I guess at that time, Polly came out with some furniture from Virginia to join them. It was a post office stop because this route is significant, called the Georgetown Trail or the Spanish Trail. It's now Highway 135, more or less, but it goes to the southwest, and this was a good location. The reason we have that post office in the backyard, the route follows a prairie shelf, so there aren't too many water crossings. And so it was a very popular route for the Indians, the Spanish, anybody wanting to go to the southwest from the lower bend of the Missouri River. So this was a very well-used trail, and it had a water stop at the foot of the hill. The postal business was pretty good, and it served until the Katy Railroad came north out of Texas. And it used the same route, this particular geographical shelf, to run their railroad up to Boonville. And the trouble was, this Pleasant Green stop was down nestled between two hills. Well, you don't want to park your train down there to unload your mail at the foot of a hill. They wanted to unload at the top of the hill so they wouldn't have to pour on the coal to get going. So they gave a few acres to form the town of Pleasant Green up there, where they built a post office.
So that's why the sign that says Pleasant Green, named after this this ancestral plantation, is up on the top of that hill instead of down here where the plantation actually exists, for which the town is named. Is that correct?
Yeah. So we have now a post office at the top of the hill called Pleasant Green, which became quite a little community in its day. When the Katy Railroad ceased to run not too terribly long ago, the little building was abandoned, and it was a refuge for anybody that hopped off the train, and it was falling down. So we had it moved here into the yard and sort of restored it. It was also the phone company, and it had been a little general store. It had quite a history. 1872 was when it was built. But that's why that's in the backyard. We have the first and the last Pleasant Green post offices, because the town of Pleasant Green does not exist. Okay, up to date. The area was important because there was this traffic that went into the Southwest. And so there were comings and goings. And this room, which was the original part of the house, became a gathering place to pick up the mail and exchange gossip. The front part of the house was built as the generations moved in. The front part of the house, we figure, was about 1830, 1835. The different sons of Polly and Winston, and their Anthony Smith, their son, who kind of took over the place. He had three brothers and two sisters, built along this east-southwest road. They owned a lot of acres of land. The government had given big parcels to veterans of all the wars, and these parcels of land could be bought up at the courthouse if people wanted to sell them. So people out here made a fortune buying up land grants and then reselling them. And this happened to a great extent out in these parts. The traffic, when you're on a trail, you can go 15 miles in a day, usually. So if you look at this old Georgetown Road, Spanish Trail, whatever it is, every 15 miles, there'll be a water stop. This was a water stop down here. Mm-hmm. There was one north of here where the Union Army parked. They were headed for the Battle of all those Southwestern battles, the name escaped me.
Wilson's Creek?
No. Never mind.
Okay.
Okay. Was that bad? It was Wilson's Creek. Yeah, Carthage. Yeah, the Battle of Carthage and Wilson's Creek. Mm-hmm. Should I say that again?
Yeah, just go ahead and say it.
Oh, it was the Battle of Carthage and then the Battle of Wilson's Creek. And they marched past here on the 4th of July. They had camped on the creek north of here, and which is you can walk through it. It's a very low creek, and they started shedding their woolen clothes because of buttons and all kinds of buckles had been found up around that creek where they had camped overnight. The 4th of July they celebrated southwest of here, but nobody was here when they marched by. I'm getting off the subject. When they marched past Pleasant Green to that battle, little boys were in the apple orchard across the road, I understand, and they threw green apples at the soldiers. But these soldiers had just come from Iowa, and they were probably pretty hungry, so they grabbed these green apples and carried them with them till they got ripe, which I think is amazing. The writer who wrote about that walk to Carthage said that they were so hungry that they kept those apples till they ripened.
They were smart then.
That's a trick, because apples are too green. They just never really ripened.
I guess they dried them up.
I don't know, yeah.
But that's the story.
They had to be hungry.
Yeah. Everything I say has been handed down. There's nothing in writing except this march to Carthage. Mm-hmm. He did describe going to the back door of some place and getting a glass of buttermilk. But everybody was out partying somewhere for the 4th of July, apparently. Mm-hmm. And there weren't a lot of people home when they marched. They crossed the river down here, the Lamine, and they lost the howitzer in the river. And I'd love to know if anybody ever retrieved that howitzer, because the Union Army just left Boonville and marched and carried their guns. They had very few pieces of heavy equipment.
Yeah, a howitzer would be pretty heavy equipment too.
Right. And of course they ate along the way. They didn't have a food train, as I understand. They just took what they could find from the locals.
Winky, talk a little bit more about this, what you understand about this land grant process that your family was able to access and eventually then establish Pleasant Green. And it's in this book, you have these books of materials. Ooh. And so kind of you might refer back to that, but talk about that a little bit, because that's what gave them the right to have this property.
Well, they had come out before.
Okay.
These grants weren't able to be granted until Missouri had been surveyed. The Spanish just gave them, you know, they bought this hunk of land, but it had to be surveyed. And the survey of Missouri, I don't think, was completed until into the 1820s. And of course, there were problems with the Spanish, because there were Spanish land grants, too. Up in Pilot Grove, they have a big grant given by the Indians to Choteau, who was a trapper, and they loved him. They gave him all this land with springs on it. And of course, all these things had to be settled. So these land grants couldn't be officially given to the veterans until they could have sections and, numbers and all that for the land. But the game was, people would rather have money if they lived on the East Coast. So they would send the word out here to the little county headquarters, courthouses. No, they didn't really have courthouses yet. Yeah, I guess they did. And offer their patents for sale. And people bought them up like crazy to resell at a higher price to the later immigrants coming out. Mm-hmm. And people amassed acres and acres, 17,500 for this family. Other families collected 24,000 acres and resold it. And this was a lot more guaranteed income than your hemp crops and your corn crops and the other things that you were planting on your land. Hemp was the big product out here. You cut your hemp, and then you soaked it. And then you had to beat it to break it down into the fibers for rope. And that was the biggest cash crop they had out here, actually, besides maybe some corn or something. But it required a lot of help. And so the black people were very useful in helping break the hemp. And then it got dried up and hauled up to Boonville. They had several, what they call rope walks up there where they made rope.
So, Winky, are you saying that some of the earliest history of Pleasant Green is as a hemp plantation or not?
I forgot. The way it worked, when you married out here, and everybody in this local area had black people that they had brought with them from Virginia. You couldn't sell them in Kentucky, and you wouldn't in many cases. But when you married, for instance, when Winston, Anthony Winston married Mary Elizabeth Reed, she came with three or four black help from the Reed place up here. When Henry Ruby up here married another Reed girl, she brought some black people with her. To house these people, they had a little courtyard back here to the west, east, with five nice little cabins, according to the sketch made in 1877. They were very respectable little cottages, and they lived back there. The inventory of the black people was made in 1872 at the death of Senior Walker, and there were 17 black people here, ranging in age from 5 to, I think, 50 that were in the inventory. But they stayed in those cabins until the place was sold at the courthouse door in bankruptcy in the early 1900s. And the new owner did not want all these people on the property.
And is that the point at which the property for a period of time fell out of the hands of your family,
right,
your ancestors?
Right. That was it. Mm-hmm. And some of the black people had stayed. The men could work down there at the quarry. There's a Swinney Quarry over there where they were building the gravel, making the gravel for the railroad. That was a wonderful job. In fact, it was they had such a good population of workers. They started a black church over there, and the cemetery there alone has almost 200 burials there. That was a very thriving community.
Some of them lived here. Excuse me, are those all African-American burials, all mm-hmm. Negro burials?
Yeah, it was the Mount Moriah African Methodist Episcopal Church. Mm-hmm. And it just fell down a year ago. The cemetery is still there.
A related question to when the property Pleasant Green falls out of the hands of your family for a period of time in the early 1900s. Were the former slaves still living in these cabins back here at that time? And then that owner at that time, did they have to leave Pleasant? They were forced then to leave.
Yes.
Yeah, he did not want them to be here any longer. So they...
The family let one lady with a young daughter stay. So that's why we have that one cabin in the back. Most of the black people went to Sedalia because there were jobs in the railroad business. Sedalia was quite a rail hub at one time.
So when you say the one cabin in the back, you mean right behind this house?
Yes.
There's a, what, maybe 14 by 24?
Right.
The structure.
It's a two-room structure. It was meant for two separate families, but we cut a door to connect them. But the other cabins were either hauled away or burned.
And is this the cabin that remains behind the house here? Is it emblematic of what they all looked like?
More or less, yes. Mm-hmm. They were all framed, And they did not have screens, no screen doors, which is, of course, 1850, they hadn't discovered malaria, came from mosquitoes yet.
Yeah. So what else might you add about the property itself, the house itself? You might recount quickly again, the initial property house consisted of this one room that you now call the growler. And then within a 20 or 30 years, the front of the house was built, those two rooms down and up. And then at some later date, about when, was this back part that we now sit in and the kitchen and the utility space. Now, about when?
We figure about 1840. Mm. The kitchen had a dirt floor.
It was, of course, several feet down. And this dining room had an opening on the south baseboard where you could hand plates back and forth, which was highly informal, but it was handy.
So the kitchen, down. So when they were handing the plates, they're handing the plates up like this.
Through the hole. Uh-huh. That was for the winter time. Summertime, they had a brick kitchen to the west of the house. And it was probably a lot bigger. It was gone by the time we got here, but it's in a sketch made of the place.
Were there some steps from this dining room that we now sit in to that kitchen?
Probably so. But it'd be easier to pass it through a hole.
Yeah, yeah, an opening of some sort.
Mm-hmm. The kitchen's out in there.
The summer kitchen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh, yeah. So that would have been the slaves would have done the cooking and handled the food up from that kitchen mostly in the wintertime. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they used the summer kitchen, right, which was detached from the home.
Right. This was a very informal place, I'm sure. I don't think there were any grand prospects because everybody had to work. When you look at the sale bills, the yard goods, they bought buttons by the gross, thread by the pound, to keep people dressed, mm-hmm, and fed. It was a full-time job. Mm-hmm. And there were the sick. We have doctor bills coming out to visit some of the black people that were ill. It was a very hard life. It wasn't gone with the wind.
Winky, these four interviews that we have done with you have been absolutely fascinating and enlightening. But I would just say this, that for someone of your age and experience and talent, it has just been such a privilege to spend this time with you, to get to know your daughter, Sarah, a little bit, to get to know my friend Pat so much better. It's really, the whole thing has just been a joy to me in every imaginable way. And I cannot thank you enough
for having, humbled.
I mean,
absolutely humbled.
I am no expert on any of this. I just knew that somehow we had to capture your story. And it has kind of been haphazard in a way, but I think somehow we'll unravel it as best we can. We'll get it to the Missouri Historical Society, and we'll make as good a sense as can be made of it. But nonetheless, you are a remarkable person with an amazing family history, and your own personal history is remarkable as well. And I'm just so grateful that you would let us take this time from you to unravel as much as we could. I'm sure a professional historian could have asked you much better questions and gotten a lot more out of it, but I think it's been a very fascinating time, and I would ask Pat to just add any thoughts she's had to these four sessions we've had with you.
Oh, it's been a great pleasure. I've enjoyed one of the things I've enjoyed the most is your accent and your locutions, because they're from another era and another region of the country. And it's just been a real pleasure listening to the cadence of your stories.
Thank you. You're very kind.
Love meeting you.
We're going to have to do a lot of editing anyway, so I'm not worried about we can. Mm-hmm. I just want you to know how grateful I feel that you have done this and that I've gotten to know you. I mean, just to get to know you, Winky, and to know Sarah, and it's just a tremendous joy. I feel the greatest gratitude for it. Thank you.
I love you saying nice things.
It's nice to know that Cooper County and Howard County can shake hands over personal history and history, local history.
Cooper and Howard are kind of different.
They're very different. It's very different.
I noticed that when we were up there parading around the courthouse, not go to war with Iran, three of us, or four of us, I think, drove over there to carry sides. But that could never have happened in Cooper County.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's wrong with Cooper County. I haven't figured them out. I think it's because, I'd say this in all respect for the German culture. Mm-hmm. I think it's because of the German culture that is prevalent in Cooper. You don't have that in Howard County to the extent we do.
Okay.
The
I was fascinated to learn when I first moved to the area that German heritage account is the largest percentage in terms of people in this area. Yeah. Goes into Columbia, which is Boone County, and Howard County, and Cooper County.
Yeah, it is amazing. Mm-hmm. Of course, in Little Rock, we had some of that. Mm-hmm. See, I grew up in Little Rock.
Mm-hmm.
And we had Carpetbagger Hill. The people came down for the Civil War, the soldiers, and they stayed.
Mm-hmm.
And they all built these gorgeous homes.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Little Rock was involved with the Civil War. People don't give them credit, but Pea Ridge and Pine Ridge and a lot of the, Arkansas took a beating, but
when you drive down to Arkansas, like when you go south from, like you're going to go to wherever all those Walmart places are down there now.
Oh, that area. Yeah.
You just keep going past all these battlefields, and they're marked. They have markers, historical markers. It's like the Battle of Pea Ridge. I mean, there's a great huge area. And there's all this informational historical marker stuff that's lined the roads.
I had a horse named David O'Dodd, and I found out he was a teenager that was hung by the Yankees as a spy.
Oh, dear.
They
named the horse after him.
Little Rock never gets credit for it.
Mm-hmm.
But it is funny how, I'll show you the book that Ann put together. It's too wordy. Bless her heart. She took four lines to say what she could say at once.
Well, Winky, one of the fascinating things about having interviewed you is that slavery and the Confederacy is very much called into question these days as anything honorable, as well it should be. But
all over again. This is what Ann turned up with for fourth graders. They can hardly lift it. Oh, poor darling. Ann, I'm sorry. She's in heaven. She was killed in a car wreck.
Oh, I've seen that book around.
Discover Cooper County by Looking Back by Ann Beckman Betteridge.
Oh, yeah. I see that around.
Where's you? Where is your...
Oh, I don't. I'm on the page, I think.
Down at the bottom it says Graphics by Florence Chestnut.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Very good. Very good. Yeah, it's a heavy book.
It is. I had in mind a little pamphlet, you know, to kind of get the kids used to the idea that there was a Civil War here. And she took 2 years on that book. And then of course, she kept, and I'm sorry, but this is the way it was.
I have a sketch this big, something reduced this side for something. Well, next thing I knew, it had to be smaller. She added more copy. She could not stop writing. And of course, it's double spaced and heavy print. Mm-hmm. And it goes on and on.
You all thought this was appropriate for fourth graders?
Yeah.
Fourth graders?
And they can barely lift it.
Well, it's pretty sophisticated. Almost simultaneously with the opening of the branch railroad, Joseph Stevens platted the town of New Palestine in 1868. That's just one sentence in one paragraph.
Yeah.
I'm not sure a whole lot of fourth graders, I don't know, maybe.
Depends on the teacher.
I guess.
I don't know. I had nothing to do with the writing. I just filled the empty spaces with sketches. Mm-hmm. But it was such an interesting experience. She was very meticulous mm-hmm. about her. She had taught school for years and years and years and substituted and all that, and she knew all the kids and they adored her. Mm-hmm. And the good old Historical Society would come up with the money to print 800 or 1,000. There run about 398 fourth graders every year in Cooper County. And she would go around to every school and pass out those books, and she would hand them, each student, a book and a Mars bar, a little Mars bar. Because a lady in Cooper County had won a car by naming the name of that bar. And this is in the book as historical, that she won the prize for naming the Mars bar. I hope I got the right bar. I think it was Mars, yeah.
It might have been Snickers.
Pardon?
I think it was Snickers, but I'm...
Oh, it was.
But
it was
it's in the book, so we can look it up.
That's it, Snickers, yeah. Yeah.
One of the other things that fascinates me about you and this whole story and this whole series of interviews is that you tell this story through the lens of the Old South and through the lens of the plantation, from the plantation owner's view. Most of history today is much more seen through the lens and of the Black experience.
You're right.
And the experience of slaves.
Right.
So one of the reasons this is so important is because of the view that you can give to this. I'm not saying whether it's right, wrong, or indifferent, but it is your view and your experience, and that's distinctly different than the view that we're more likely to view history through today. And I appreciate that so much, because you are one of the few remaining people that can give a personal experiential
vestige.
That's right. You are a vestige of that Old South, and very few people remain that have any sense of that.
And that's kind of a curse as well. But I will say this, when you look at the doctor bills, and the bills for boots and clothes and everything, they were well treated, and they never sold any, because they had stayed with them all the way from Virginia out to here. And when the war was over, some of them left. My cousin has tracked one named Lucinda. She left here, and she had a couple of husbands. She settled down in Pilot Grove and had a bunch of kids and died and was buried in the cemetery, the Black cemetery up at Pilot Grove. Now, I hate to say this, but when given the chance, Yankees could be just as mean about colored folks as anybody. this book that was written about Lyon's march to Carthage, it was Carthage, in Wilson's Creek, yeah. He starts back in Iowa when he joined the first volunteer army to go with the battle, go down to battle the Southerners at Carthage. And he wrote some naughty things about black people. He said they were competition from what his job, and they were taking jobs away from the white folks, and he was pretty mad about that. But yet, he marched to the Battle of Wilson's Creek and survived, defending the Union. I don't know.
Well, you know, the history of racism in the quote white people is a legion and forever. It didn't just begin with slavery. I mean, there's always been bigotry toward people of color, but many of the people, I mean, even Lincoln, you know, had some pretty negative views about African Americans, even though he saw the correctness of emancipation. But yeah, so that a lot of these Northerners were also racist is not news.
I just grieve. There was a wonderful black man married to a white girl in Pilot Grove, and we got along so well. He was the nicest guy. He took care of her kids while she was in nurse's training. And he, on his own, he went out there to Mount Moriah and started clearing the weeds around those graves. He was so nice. He came from Glasgow somewhere. Anyway, and he'd come by after he'd put in the stand out there and we'd visit. Just the nicest guy. And he said, a white man over there had come out and fussed at him for messing with that cemetery, that was his property, that he owned the cemetery. And it kind of hurt his feelings. And so, by golly, I have a friend who knows her way around the courthouse. So we went up to the courthouse and looked back in the deeds and records. And that property belonged to the Methodist Church. It was donated by a black family who had gotten it from, I think, one of the Walkers as a departure gift when they moved off the land. Anyway, and so he got a copy of that to wave at that fella. And he went back to his work. Okay. Then somebody in Sedalia, a descendant of some of these people buried out there, got wind that he was cleaning the cemetery. And he went over to talk to her, and she ate him out for working in that cemetery when he didn't have anybody buried there. Now, that's rude. But she was an old lady and cross and all that. Can't remember which family she was from. But Perry. No, she wasn't a Perry.
Sims? Wasn't it the Sims?
Who?
Sims.
The Sims.
It was a Sims. Yes. It was. One of the Sims.
Well, that reminds me that I think for historical purposes that Mount Moriah Cemetery is an important spot because there are 200 black, many perhaps former slaves, that are buried there. And so that needs to be a historical note that's made. It should be kept up somehow.
We wanted to put up a marker there. But this lady was so cross and ornery about it. She just didn't want them messing with him. Well, what happened? He gave up, and he ended up separating from the girl he was married to in Pilot Grove, and He moved up. He moved up to Marshall. Good fella, but gone. Okay. The Methodist down here all of a sudden got interested because it was a Methodist church. They didn't do a thing to the building. It was slowly falling down. But they had a day of cleanup, mm-hmm. and we all made sandwiches and all that, and they took down some trees. They really cleaned it up. We didn't hear a thing out of Ms. Sims and Sedalia, but nobody's wanted to touch it since, and the church is now gone, oh. which is too bad. But it needs a marker. Mm-hmm. It really does. It
needs a historical marker, and mm-hmm. the cemetery deserves to be kept.
Well, it would be nice to put mm-hmm. the names on in granite mm-hmm. of the main families that are there. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be every individual, because the names, some of them is just Bertie mm-hmm. or Mary Sue. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of last names. We have the records of the names. Somebody copied the names down, and we have it in the
book.
So
the people that are buried there are known. Those names are all known of those burials.
Well, the ones that had a marker.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
But like I say, they were pretty rough. The cemetery was walked in 1970 by a group of people before we founded our historical society. So we got all their records. So we have the names of the tombs, what's on the tombstones, but that's all.
One other thing that we might do, because we're still recording here, is Sarah, your daughter Sarah, who now lives in Colorado, is here with you again. And I might ask Sarah what she sees as the future of Pleasant Green.
That's a good question.
Well, I have three brothers, and two of us are very, very attached to Pleasant Green, and the other two see it as a real burden, and has been sort of a real sap of mom's energy and so forth. But anyway, here it is. It's her greatest work of art, in my opinion, mm-hmm. is preserving this place. And I'd really like it to be a place where people can come and write and research, you know, sort of a writer's retreat, sort of. But also it has to be financially viable. And if it ever made a dime, I would like it to go towards reparations. I would love it to be part of a grand plan for reparations. So I don't know, being next to the trail is kind of nice, but I don't know. It's a little quiet for most people, so it's not like it would be a successful Airbnb necessarily. But I'd love it to be a writer's retreat for Black people researching or writing or processing. I think that would be lovely to host scholars who are digging in that way, and as a forum for discussions with people who want to know more and yeah. talk more about it.
That's a great plan.
But
that's a great idea.
It's an idea.
To bring it closer to the family, two of you see something like that evolving, and two of the siblings are not so interested in it at all.
Yeah, Alan is the pilot. He's into motorcycles. And Jack is retired from NBC. He's got a grandchild of his own, and they're more tuned into Western part of the, you know, they live outside Denver, mm-hmm. and they're strictly not interested. it's hard to tell. Stanley is divorced and is living in an apartment mm-hmm. out there in near Google, because he works at Google. Because of the divorce, they just have one child. He likes it here too, yeah. But who knows? You can't predict. Sure, you make a plan. You might as well just, you know, it's a waste of time.
Yeah. We've got lots of great ideas, but
Yeah.
Do you ever see yourself living here, Sarah?
Oh, sure.
Oh, you do?
Oh, I'd love to.
Okay.
Definitely. I really like it here, and I've gotten to know some of the locals. I put my kid in school here for 10 weeks to help mom with a health problem, and that was a really nice way to get to know some people, and I just find it really, really beautiful. And of course, the history is priceless. It's really a remarkable thing. But you know, I'm just a middle-aged lady. I don't know. There's a lot of weeds to pull.
Yeah. Well, and time and tide rolls on, and you just if it's held up this long, we'd like to think. Listen, you need some ice in your glass, and you.
I think we can go ahead and turn off the recording now.
Oh, my lady, as long as it's been recorded.
Uh-huh. No, we've been recording all this. We're going to have to do some heavy.